Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. So, ironically enough, for anyone who doesn't know, Red Cross comes on once a month. Usually Jocelyn and I connect and we talk about what we're going to discuss on the next upcoming segment. And ironically enough, Jocelyn Hillard, who's the Regional Communications Director for the American Red Cross in Connecticut, wanted to talk about responding to Hurricane Henri because we were going to be enduring. It was going to be horrible, but luckily, Henri really didn't impact us that much. And now we're seeing the aftermath of Ida and what it has done to some of the southern states in the U.S. And joining me now is Jocelyn. So good morning to you, Jocelyn. Thank you so much for coming on, first and foremost.
Thank you for having me, Melissa. Always a pleasure.
So first of all, Jocelyn, talk to us about what efforts the American Red Cross does to be prepared for some of these hurricanes or tropical storms.
So we have a team of volunteers that train throughout the year to become prepared to respond to these larger storms, such as Henri or now Hurricane Ida. We also make tremendous efforts to create partnerships with communities to prepare places for people to go, such as a shelter, getting supplies ready, and what that might look like for us should a storm happen. You know, you are right, Melissa, when you said that just a couple days ago, even we were talking about Henri, and now our focus has switched to Ida. So a lot of the efforts that our volunteers made here to help our communities that were to be and were impacted by Henri, such as opening up shelters, getting supplies, water, food ready for places that might not have power or might not have access, we're now doing that at a larger scale down in Louisiana and the surrounding areas. So it's certainly been a very busy time for American Red Cross volunteers, and I couldn't be more proud of their work.
So Jocelyn, I'm curious, kind of help us to understand this. How do you guys even prep for somewhere like out of state, like Louisiana? How do you turn around and say, okay, a day later, we're going to send people down, we're going to find shelters, we're going to get them resources? Like, it's a little out of our comfort zone because it's not here in Connecticut. So how do you guys even prep for that and make moves so quickly?
Yeah, that's the beauty about being part of a national organization. So our friends in Louisiana and the surrounding states, when they saw that a hurricane might be coming their way, they started making those efforts. We also, here from Connecticut, we had a lot of that stuff prepared, I will say. We had a lot of our trucks full of those supplies. And we had volunteers leave just a few days ago prior to the storm with a few of our local box trucks, what we call emergency response vehicles, driving down to the area with those supplies to help provide that extra support to our friends down in the south along the Gulf Coast. But this is something that we prepare for. You know, we have warehouses across the country ready for these types of events, and we can, essentially put up a relief operation within 24 hours in some areas.
And we're talking this morning to Jocelyn Hillard, who is with the American Red Cross. In fact, Jocelyn is the Regional Communications Director for the American Red Cross in Connecticut and Rhode Island. So, let's come back here at home, Jocelyn, because we know it's still very early on to what's going on in Louisiana. We know that crews have headed down there to help out in the efforts. But here at home, we also deal with maybe not to the extreme of what Florida or Louisiana or Texas has gone through, but we also deal with some pretty rough and nasty weather. Sometimes, are there ways that people should be prepping in the event of an emergency like that?
Absolutely. September is National Preparedness Month, and this is a reminder, as was Hurricane Henri, that storms can happen. Not only now, but during the wintertime, we see some pretty wicked snowstorms, and then there might be some spring, flooding or what have you. So it's always important that you are thinking about how can you keep you and your family prepared should something happen. We kind of have three simple tips to go by for you to remember, which is get a kit, make a plan, and be informed. So quickly, get a kit means building your emergency kit. As you were preparing for Henri, think about what was important to you, water, food, or any dietary restrictions that you might have. pet food, medications, anything, eyeglasses, you know, things that were important to you should you have lost power or had to stay in your home for a few days. Additionally, make a plan. What does that look like for your family? Are there older adults or people with mobility, hearing, learning, or other, you know, things that might require a little extra planning? What about our children? You know, what are those steps that you can take to make sure your family feels comfortable? And additionally, be informed. How are you connected to your local officials, and how are you connected to your radios, you know, to keep the most up-to-date information? So keep those three things in mind, and, you know, practice those throughout the year.
And Jocelyn, I'm curious, you know, you talked about how grateful you are to the volunteers mm-hmm. who are part of the Red Cross. You know, when somebody decides to, if they want to volunteer, first of all, how do they do it? But second of all, you know, does it say in there, like, hey, are you flexible to travel? Like, I mean, for the volunteers who are now headed or have already gotten down to Louisiana, you know, they must know ahead of time, like, listen, you know, you're taking on this job. It may require you to go to another state to help out in these kinds of efforts.
Absolutely. So we have volunteers that do train throughout the year and go on what we call deployments at different times of the year. I personally just got back from helping out at the California wildfires earlier in August. So we have volunteers that are ready, that are interested and, you know, really feel a calling to help out in areas that are experiencing these tremendous hurricanes and other disasters. So we are always looking for more volunteers to join our team, particularly those who, you know, are willing to go to a shelter and really help tend to the communities, those people who have lost their homes, and also health professionals. So anyone with a professional license, such as an RN, LPN, LVN, you know, we need your help additionally on those larger scale, you know, efforts. So if you are interested in helping out, you know, we always say that you don't need a particular skill, but you do need a big heart because you are helping people during their darkest times. So if you're interested in joining and learning more and taking trainings, visit redcross.org/volunteer.
Jocelyn, we were just talking about storm prepping and being able to respond and what the American Red Cross does and volunteers. But I wanted to quickly switch gears only because I do get you only once a month. Where are we at with blood donations?
So right now, you know, over the summer, we did experience a severe blood shortage. And right now, thanks to the generosity of those blood donors who stepped up, we are still experiencing an ongoing critical need, but we're not at that shortage level right now. But that's not to say that the need for blood isn't always constant. You know, that's why we are always asking for people who did make those blood donation appointments here in September or June, July, and August to make their appointments again so that we are continuing to meet the needs of those patients who rely on that life-saving blood.
And, you know, and I was reading, I think, earlier this morning, Jocelyn, that there's a new incentive to give blood. Could you talk about some of the things that the Red Cross offered over the summer just to try to get more people to sign up and overcome their fears of donating blood?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have a lot of tremendous partners that step up throughout the year. And right now, if you are able to donate this weekend over Labor Day, which oftentimes during holidays or vacations, we do see a dip in blood donations because people are traveling or might have, you know, other things on their minds. But this weekend between September 3rd and 7th, if you donate, you will receive a 16-ounce Red Cross campfire mug. And any donors who come to give throughout the month of September will receive a free haircut coupon by email from Sports Clips Haircuts, which has locations across Connecticut.
Very cool. And, you know, I do want to bring this up, Jocelyn, because I know it's, again, I want to make it very clear to our listeners, Jocelyn doesn't make, like, all the calls on what the American Red Cross does. It's a huge foundation. It's a huge organization. But I was curious, Jocelyn, you know, in the last couple of times you and I have chatted, especially over the summer when we were talking about the shortages, I've had a few of my listeners who are gay. And they say, you know, I would love to be able to donate, but I can't. I'm not allowed to donate. And when I look back at why they can't, it seems pretty archaic. why there's still stipulations why people who are gay cannot donate blood. Do you know if there's any movement on changing that? Because that's a huge population of people who would be very much willing and would love to be able to give their blood. And because everyone goes through health screenings anyways, it just seems, like I said, very archaic that the gay population can't donate blood at this point.
Sure, I completely understand. And our Red Cross top priority is that, you know, the safety of our blood, our volunteer blood donors and the patients that need them. So we are, you know, we understand where some of those frustrations come from. You know, we work closely with the FDA and follow those FDA guidelines. And we have been working to advocate to really review those guidelines and see, you know, how can we better serve our populations? You know, I'm happy to provide you some statements following this interview, but, you know, I promise you that your, you know, your concerns are heard and our Red Cross, you know, leaders are looking into it.
That would be great. I plan to replay this, so I would love to be able to, if you have any statements that I could share with our listeners, I would share them live on the air. That would be really great, Jocelyn. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. And Jocelyn, again, what is your website? What's a way that people can contact if they want to be able to donate? Maybe they want to host a blood drive in their town or city. How do they do that?
So the best way to kind of make those first steps to make a donation is to go to redcrossblood.org, and where you can see where some upcoming donations or blood donation opportunities are in your area. We also encourage you to download that Red Cross Blood Donation app. That not only is a quick way to schedule, but to follow your blood donation journey, which is pretty cool. I know that a blood donation I had just a couple months ago went to Bridgeport, which was really close to where I live. So, that's the best way to do it. And if you are interested in hosting a blood drive, feel free to go to redcrossblood.org and check out those the application.
And can people sign up to be volunteers there as well, or like put an application in to be a volunteer?
Oh, absolutely. We're always looking for some extra set of hands at our blood drive. So that would go to redcross.org/volunteer. I know a lot of websites, but if you go to redcross.org, you'll always find where you're looking to go next.
And I meant to ask you this before, Jocelyn. Do you have to be somebody with a medical professional background to volunteer for Red Cross?
Absolutely not. We have volunteers that come from all different backgrounds. There are some needs I mentioned in an earlier when we talked earlier today that there are some needs for those with health backgrounds, but anyone can become a volunteer, whether you have a background in logistics or you enjoy, you know, being out in the public or helping us with some paperwork. No matter what you'd like to do, there's an opportunity for you. So I encourage you to go to redcross.org/volunteer and check out those available opportunities and see what might work for you.
Jocelyn Hillard, the Regional Communications Director of American Red Cross in Connecticut and Rhode Island. We thank you so much for always checking in with us, and we'll talk again next month.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Listen in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dan. For many of our small businesses, they know that yesterday was the cutoff to apply and submit, an application, I should say, for the ARP funding. So what's the next step now for the many businesses that applied for this federal money?
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. So the American Rescue Plan dollars that came into the city, it's in total, it'll be north of $100 million coming in. But they've initially received about $80,000. I think the second batch is coming early next year. So they set aside about $25 million specifically for small businesses. And there's a variety of categories that businesses were able to apply to. I think we spoke about them a couple of weeks ago or last week. So the next step, I know the city is working on putting together review committees for each of the various categories. As I mentioned, they range from workforce development all the way to small business expansion. So I'm looking forward to participating in those review process for that. And I think there's just going to be a vetting out process with the applications that come in. I think I mentioned last time we spoke that I expect this process to be a little bit smoother than the CARES Act dollars that we received of $1 million just because of the process is a little bit different. And I think the requirements of what the federal government's looking for, because the HUD dollars from the CARES Act There are a lot of details that we need to cover bases on, which is what took so long to get some of these checks out, which I think they're still working on. So this one, I'm hopeful that's going to be a little bit smoother. But I guess time will tell, and we'll see how quickly they can get those dollars distributed out to businesses that are really in need still of not just the dollars to support their businesses, but hopefully, this will help spark some economic development as well. So we'll see how it all shakes out, but we're looking forward to participating as the business council here in Bridgeport.
Dan, give us a ballpark idea. How many small businesses are going to benefit from these federal dollars?
I don't know the variety of applications. I haven't been exposed to that yet. But it should be several. And then you also consider the nonprofits. There's a whole category for nonprofit organizations, too. So, and as you know, Bridgeport's got a lot of nonprofits. So I suspect we should see several hundred of them at least. I can't imagine it'll be less than 300-400 of them. Again, depending on how large of amount of chunk of dollars they give out per application. There isn't a minimum or a maximum, I think, on any of the applications, whereas the CARES grant dollars was very finite, right? It was just $1 million that they had to play with.
Right.
So they only, I think the max that they were looking to distribute was about $5,000. So it really limited our ability to extend it beyond just, the couple hundred people that applied.
We're talking to Dan Onofrio this morning of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And Dan, just to switch gears a little bit, but kind of on topic with COVID, because that's where the CARES Act dollars really came out of COVID. Can you talk a little bit about COVID rules and mandates? So we're starting to see more and more companies put mandates in place that you either have to be vaccinated or you have to test weekly for COVID. What are some of the things you're hearing from the surrounding businesses, part of, your council, and some of the concerns with putting mandates in place? Like, are we seeing mass exit? Are we seeing people upset with the rules or filing lawsuits, anything like that?
I haven't seen anything on the legal side where, people are filing lawsuits. I think we spoke again about this a couple months ago. The trend was going to start. We were going to start seeing businesses have to kind of draw the line somewhere. For a couple of reasons. One, to protect their employees, the ones that are coming in. They took a hard hit last year with, keeping people at home, the ones that think of manufacturers that, they're an assembly line or they're actually producing goods, tangible goods where they need people physically at their location, at their place of business. And, they just can't afford to shut down. That lack of productivity really hurt them in a lot of ways. They've got orders that, back orders, which is a good problem, but they just can't fulfill them because, one, they don't have the people there, and which is still a bit of a problem. People, the hiring process is still an issue. And two, the supply chain. So they're trying to do all they can to make sure that the people are coming in are safe. That's number one. And then, think of retailers and shoppers and things of that nature. They're trying to protect not just their employees, but the people coming in and frequenting and patronizing their location. So, I think the more and more we see, I think it's just human nature, right? The more and more you see people make laws and rules and things like that, people just kind of dig in, mm-hmm. So these folks that are hardcore, there's no way, I'm not sure what's in this vaccine and how it really does help. It's just not proven. It's not tested. Yeah, I think the more and more laws and rules that come out, I think the more and more they dig in and kind of just are stubborn.
Yeah, right,
so
right.
It's awful to say. It's just the reality is you look at the Northeast in Connecticut, where our vaccination rate is pretty high and things are pretty good. We're taking that, people that are getting ill in from out of the state. Our numbers are still trending in a kind of a weird, kind of week to week. It's been changing and fluctuating, but it really hasn't been, horrific like some of these other states that just haven't had their vaccination rates, up in the 60s, 70s like us. They're down in the 25, 30, 40 range, and there's problems. Mm-hmm. So now that the kids are going back to school, I think we're doing all we can to protect people. And I said it, many times, I'll say it again, get educated on the vaccine, understand the true facts about it, and hopefully people will make the decision to get it. I'm a believer that, you do right for yourself to protect yourself, but also others too, you know. So, you know, I hope people just get the education that they need and comfort to ultimately get the vaccine. You know, I advocate for it.
Mm-hmm. And Dan Onofrio, I'm just curious before I let you go, you know, you mentioned back to school, and a lot of parents in this last year have had to do the scrambling of, are my kids in or out, or do I work from home or do I not? And most kids are basically going to be in school full time. Are you going to see maybe in the next couple of months more companies bringing people back in person, or are they already back in person basically?
I don't think a lot of, you know, it depends on the scenario, right? As I mentioned, with a lot of the manufacturers, the ones that have physical plants, obviously they need people in, you know, physically in their facilities. But with the corporate spaces, it's interesting. I've heard a lot this last couple of weeks where a lot of the corporate offices, not just in Bridgeport, but in the region, say, you know what, we're going to extend our remote working, you know, out to January just to kind of see what happens.
Google, I think, just did that. I just heard about that. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And then others are really just taking this opportunity to really transform how they do business. And a lot of them are, you know, because they're taking, they realize that, hey, you know, we can operate just as productively, mm-hmm. you know, working remotely. So there's a hybrid model that's kind of coming out from all this. Where I've seen some companies are actually doing shifts where there's a certain crew that comes in, you know, 2 days a week, and then the other 2 days a week, and other set of people come in, and they kind of do this rotating thing. And I think it's great. You know, I have some colleagues that work the traditional 9-to-5, or at least pre-pandemic, and now they're saying, you know, they're not so hardcore on the 9-to-5 anymore, as long as we're getting our work done. And it's great for me and my family because it allows me to the flexibility mm-hmm. to, you know, take care of my things with my family, doctor's appointments and getting kids to school and all that stuff. So I think, you know, we were learning, a lot of companies are learning from this and realizing that, you know, the traditional punch in the clock, 9-to-5, maybe, you know, in certain scenarios, that's not as effective and ultimately satisfactory for their employees. So mm-hmm. it's almost like another employee benefit in some way, if the companies can figure out a way to do it effectively.
I would agree with that. Well, Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
You got it. Let's have a great week. Hopefully the rain holds off for us here.
I know, right? Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
The city of Bridgeport is celebrating 200 years strong. Melissa in the Morning finds out what's happening in the Park City. It's BPT 200, now on WICC 600.
Well, I'll tell you what's happening. This upcoming weekend might be one of the most exciting weekends to come in the city of Bridgeport. And we have been waiting for it. We have been anticipating it. I have gotten so many phone calls about this concert that's coming up this weekend. Joining me right now is Mark Halstead, who is with the Bridgeport Symphony Orchestra. And I can't tell you, Mark, how many phone calls I have gotten from our listeners who just want to make sure they don't miss out on what's happening at the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. First of all, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. We're so excited, too. The whole orchestra, you know, it's been a tough year. And even though we actually did concerts remotely last year, so the orchestra got together, they, you know, it's still like a big family reunion every time they get together. I think we value this so much more after COVID, just to be together and those musicians making music. It's a beautiful experience. And I think the audience is going to pick up on that this weekend.
So, I mean, first of all, before we even talk about what's coming this weekend, talk to us about how you guys were able to sort of keep things going when we were living in a time where you couldn't see anything live, you couldn't go to theaters, you couldn't even go outdoors really to even concerts, you couldn't gather. How did you guys keep it together and stay, you know, upbeat and successful?
A lot of lost hair and praying over the past year by everybody on our board. Really, a great experience of coming together, making things work. We were one of the only symphonies in the country that actually put on a live concert in the middle of things last September, the very same weekend up in Trumbull. COVID safe. We were able to distance the musicians, distance the audience. And, of course, the hard part was that the concert was a huge success. And everybody was happy, and we couldn't say anything for at least 2 weeks till we found out nobody got sick. And then when we found out nobody got sick, it was old news. But
it was
a huge event. And then it gave us really the gumption to put on a remote series last year. We recorded 4 concerts, and we put them out for subscription. We got great response. And the cool thing was we got subscribers from 10 other states. We did a live stream from the Klein where we had people coming in from Asia and Europe. And it was just so exciting. And our conductor, our regular conductor, Eric Jacobson, won't be with us this weekend, but he's our music director. He was so into this, getting the orchestra back together. He was nervous about it in the beginning, like everybody was. But, boy, when he got into it, it was with both feet. And by the final concert of last April, the musicians were so in tune with one another again. It was a magic thing to watch. I am not a musician, but I can appreciate when I see art being made and I see that pulsation of just great talent all coming together. And that's going to happen for us on the stage at the Amp on Saturday. And it's like everybody is keyed up. Everybody's happy. It's and celebrating Bridgeport's 200th. I'm a Bridgeport native, and I'm proud as anything that Bridgeport has the Amp. Bridgeport has this orchestra that's really become a world-class orchestra right here in our own backyard. And we're going to have a great weekend, great weather, and we're just going to blow the roof off. We can't do that, but we'll blow right through the holes in the canvas.
There you go.
There's room for the music.
Luckily, the guys over at the amphitheater, they never put a roof on, so we could just be as loud as we want.
And that's going to be perfect.
It really is. We're talking this morning to Mark Halstead, who is the executive director of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony. Now, you heard Mark mention before the BPT 200. That is the big celebration of Bridgeport's individuality and 200-year milestone. It's going on all year round, and we've talked about the BPT 200 passport. We've talked about going to the website bpt200.com. So, Mark, here's why I get so many phone calls. People want to make sure they don't miss out on these tickets. I want to just remind folks, it's free. This is a free concert this upcoming
weekend.
It is
free. Mm-hmm. But everybody needs a ticket so that they have their reserved seat. So that confuses some people. Well, what do I need a ticket for if it's free? So you have a seat because this is a classy place here.
It isn't just
come in and spread out a blanket or something.
This is the real deal. Yeah. No. So where can people go to get tickets to reserve their seats?
You can go right to the amphitheater website or Ticketron, or you can go to gbs.org. That's our website, which has some description of the music and such that will be happening. So you can go right there, and there's a link right to Ticketmaster.
Okay.
So the amphitheater's been kind enough to let us use their ticketing system for this. So it's all going through Ticketmaster, and I think we're seeing good response. I also think that a lot of people have been waiting to see how this weekend would shape up weather-wise. And, of course, you know, how the COVID regulations would feel at the time. So I'm expecting we're going to have a real crush of tickets in the next couple of days because we're this close. Things feel safe pretty much. We're going to have great weather. What is 75 degrees and not humid on Saturday?
It's
so the breeze will come right through. It'll be gorgeous.
Yeah, it really will be. And I have to say, Mark Halstead, who is, again, the executive director of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony, even if this is not your typical genre, this isn't what you would typically love to hear maybe on your radio or whatever, I think there is just something, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's just something so beautiful about just being outside, having good food, being in good company, and listening to the music of something like GBS. I just think there's something so spectacular about it.
It is. It is. It's a grand event. For those who aren't familiar with symphony, and I know a lot of people out there, they heard this was coming up, and they said they made the symphony face. I see that. You know, I said, well,
like,
I work for the Bridgeport Symphony. And they go, oh, yeah, really?
Right.
But it's funny. When people get into it and they realize that it's been around them their whole lives, they like it. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things, we have a guest conductor for this who happens also to be the Pops conductor for New Haven, is Chelsea Tipton, who's coming up from Texas tomorrow to be with us. And Chelsea is a master at making a great Pops program because he integrates into the program some very familiar classical. So even for those who come in and say, well, I'm just here for the Broadway stuff, they're going to hear the Blue Danube. They're going to hear, I won't call it by its actual name, they're going to hear the Lone Ranger theme. And these things are great classical music that watching a 50-piece orchestra make that music on the stage is so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be in the presence of making of the music, people are going to get into that in ways that they never expected they would.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a marvelous, marvelous thing for everybody.
I agree.
So what we'll have is we'll have a little bit of classical of our regular milieu, and we'll also be flying with the Broadway stuff. We have Maureen Hamill, who's such a great local talent. Everybody loves Maureen. Maureen brought some of her Broadway friends along. along. So they'll be singing with us, and we're just going to have a great time.
Yeah, and a reminder to folks, this is making up for the Barnum Festival, which unfortunately, again, had to be canceled because of COVID.
Yeah.
So we've got the amazing concert, which, again, is free. You just have to reserve your tickets, and that's happening Saturday. And then Sunday, there's going to be the fireworks display, which is also very exciting in Bridgeport. It's going to be a great weekend.
It's the two sets of fireworks, really, because we're going to make our own fireworks on Saturday, and then you'll have the actual fireworks on Sunday. It's going to be super. Yeah. By the way, just so that people know, if they go to our website, we are offering, we have some preferred seating in the front 14 rows that is for sale for a nice nominal price of $29 or $39, but you can get a reserved seat. So if this thing gets crowded, you can be right in the front rows with us, which would be really great. And we're having a little reception, too, to welcome people in and make them part of our GBS family. I want to just put out a little shout-out, too, to all those people out there who supported us this past year in Bridgeport and beyond. That, you know, our symphony almost had to go dark like so many others. We persevered. It was appreciated, but also I can tell you we appreciate everything that our patrons did for us. They supported us all year in spirit and with money, which was needed, and we were able to do brand new things we've never done before. So I got to say, in this Bridgeport 200 year, I'm proud to say I think our symphony is doing Bridgeport proud, and we're just pleased to be part of this really exciting year for the city.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And again, if you want to catch the details of this upcoming weekend, you can head to bpt200.com. Again, you'll get the details about Saturday's concert at the amphitheater and the fireworks display on Sunday. And Mark Halstead, the executive director of the Greater Bridgeport Symphony, thank you so much for coming on this morning. I appreciate it.
Let me just throw out our email address, or my email, mark@gbs.org. Write me with any questions, please. That's what I'm here for. But we're also, our web address is gbs.org. Go on. You'll see what's coming up, too. And let's have a great time on Saturday and a great year.
Amen to that, brother. We'll talk again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
All right.
Great talking to you.
You too.